Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America, where we're going to be having some snow tonight. And I see that I also transposed a few letters in the program notes. Sorry, everybody. It's a lot of you know that a lot has been going on in my life. One of those things I really want to thank, you know, Dr. Maria, who is our guest tonight, and I'll be bringing her on just shortly and tell you what we'll be talking about. But I am truly blessed that I've had great guests on the show after the years, and Dr. Maria has been a repeat guest, but that people are also become friends. And shortly after my dad died, Dr. Maria found out and called me up, and she did have good input, but she listened. And, you know, I did talk to a bereavement person once, but I've been watching a couple of videos on YouTube. They do TED Talks and all kinds of things on there now. And late at night when I'm not driving and I'm being, you know, a night owl, I've been watching, it was research from my book before, but now I've done a little bit on grief, and I saw one that said the things that you don't say to someone who's grieving. And I had to kind of smile because I've heard them all, but I didn't hear them from Dr. Maria. And I feel very blessed to have had, Dr. Maria as a repeat guest and as a very kind friend, and really appreciate what she did for me. So I'm gonna quit with that. Then I'm gonna say it's not spring yet. We're gonna be having a snowstorm tonight, 3 to 5 inches, and Dr. Maria, I was going to say, she was also from the Midwest at one point, and congratulate her on KC winning the Super Bowl. Now, as most of you know, being a brain injury advocate, I have interest not in football. I did watch the Puppy Bowl before the Super Bowl came on, and when I heard later what the score had been for the Super Bowl, I had to just kind of laugh because it was the same 3-point spread on the Puppy Bowl earlier. So my husband and I, our good time that day was sitting with our 3 dogs watching Puppy Bowl and seeing them get excited and root for their favorite dogs. But in any case, being from Kansas, she may or may not care. We'll ask her, but congratulations on Kansas City and being where she lives now, where the sun is always out. Not really. I guess, you know, they get rain. They've had some storms, but she ain't missing the snow. I know that. I'm just sure she's not. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery, more will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, you can check out my website, inaflash.org, or you can like me on Facebook at inaflash.org. Make sure you put the .org in Facebook. If you just put in a flash, I think you wind up at something, I don't know, pornographic or rude or something like that. So in any case, both the same, my website and my Facebook page, inaflash.org. All of these shows are live, and then they go directly to On Demand. You can find the On Demand shows at braininjuryradio.com. or my shows at inaflash.org. Now, Dr. Maria is not only a brain injury survivor herself, but she is a doctor of pathology, and that means that she's always been open to learning new things and has some resiliency and tenacity to have accomplished all that she has in back of the severe brain injury that she had. But she's also always studying not only her field, but the brain field, the mental / brain field. And tonight we're going to be talking about adaptive disorder. Adjustment, aka adaptive disorder, is an excessive reaction to a stressful or traumatic event. Stressors could be a relationship issue, a job problem, health change, or any negative or positive life event. So I'm excited to hear what she has to tell us about that tonight, because I know that trauma is just part of life. Old adage, life is a series of peaks and valleys. You can feel trauma more in a negative event, I think, but stress, certainly, whether it's a negative event, a sad, hard event like that, or even if it's good. You know, if it's good, you just landed a new job, or you just wrote a book or did something you've never done before, that can be overwhelming. The learning, the adapting, well, the four A's that I talked about earlier. So with that, I want to welcome Dr. Maria to the show tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, Kim. So you addressed several things. I wanted to follow up on or mention. So you're writing another book. That was number one. Are you writing another book? Did I hear you say that?
I am.
Okay.
I am, and I'll just tell you briefly because I haven't really talked about it a lot, but I can tell you here how it came to be that I'm doing this. I feel that I was led to do it because I had a different plan. I was going to write another book, but I had a different plan of what I was going to write it about, and this was not it. But I was called to, and basically what this is the evolution of mental health from the mid-1800s through now. And so unlike my first two books, which were my stories, and all I had to do was recall and write my stories. This took an immense amount of research, which I have done already. Everything's there for me to write the book. I wrote 6 chapters of the foreword and 6 chapters of the book and have the other ones planned. But then, you know, my dad got sick on December 9th, and our whole holiday season was a blur, like it didn't even happen this year. And from the time that he passed away on Christmas morning, ever since then, I've spent time doing the after stuff for my mom. My mom and dad had been together since they were 15, and she's frankly just zombified, I guess, is the only word I can come up with for the moment. And there's a lot of things that have to be done right away, you know, burial and insurance claims and all of that kind of thing. And so I have put my book on a shelf for a while. And, you know, I usually do my writing in the winter because I don't go out a lot in the dastardly Midwest winters. You know how that is. And so by the time and then I got this eye surgery for my cataracts that I had put off twice. I was supposed to have it the week after Thanksgiving. And I called them and I said, you know, I said, I want to reschedule this surgery. I said, we're going into holiday season. I've got 2 elderly parents, and I want to be able, I do photography, a lot of you know, I want to be able to take some great holiday pictures this season of my family, because it could be one of the last holiday seasons for at least one of my folks. And so we rescheduled for January 6th. Well, then I'll be darned, I didn't get a chance to do what I wanted to do, because by the 9th, my dad was in the hospital. He was sick the week before, but wound up going to the hospital. And then everything after that was finished. So I had to call them and reschedule on the 6th and say that the reason I rescheduled last time, I didn't get that goal accomplished, but now I have to help settle my dad's affairs for my mom. And so I need to reschedule a second time. So finally on January 24th, I had the surgery, and I was talking to Maria before the show, and I'm going to talk to you guys next week about some, Simon and I will talk about some new technologies, about a lot of different things, and I'll tell about this. But, you know, the eye surgery was going to take a couple months, so I wasn't going to be able to see. And I was like, geez, it's going to be spring by the time I can get back to my book again. And I may do it, but after hard winters and the hard everything that's gone on, I guess I may really want to enjoy spring, and I may defer finishing the book until it's as hot as it gets cold, you know, like maybe August, sometime in August when it's so hot. I don't feel like going out when the air is thick like pea soup with humidity and it's hot. I might do it then. I don't really know when, but it's a very interesting thing, because one tell I'll give you is that from how mental health was treated and handled in the middle 1800s, just prior to the asylum years and then going into the asylum years, prior to the asylum years, the way they handled it, and I write about that. If you watch the news today and you see all these tent cities where 75% of the people that live in them have some kind of mental health and or substance abuse problem. And the funding has been cut largely for mental health. And I write in my book about the different treatments and so forth that they had over the asylum years. And, you know, lobotomy was the last. And what interrupted lobotomy was Thorazine coming out. So that was the beginning of Big Pharma. And that's where we've stayed. And so the new lobotomy became drugs, pharmaceuticals, and the new asylums have become prisons and tent cities. And resources are a little slim for people needing mental health help. And they're talking about it a lot on the news, which is funny because they weren't so much when I started writing this book back in October. But it'll be, I find it fascinating what we found acceptable and what we did in the name of advancement and trying to do the right thing. And then I talk about what sabotaged a plan that really was good in the beginning to remedy the situation and what happened to screw that up and corrupt the idea. And then nobody put anything into place to fix it. You know, when they closed the asylums because of the things that most people would think of now, you know, Cuckoo's Nest and all the horror stories that you hear about, the idea about them in the beginning was a really good idea compared to what was going on. But a refrain that you hear now really started back then. And it's never changed, and therein will lie the answer: underfunded, understaffed, overcrowded. And when we figure that out and quit using that as an excuse in a lot of areas, you know, we try everything but fixing that which keeps repeating over and over and over and over and over in a lot of venues for hundreds of years. We should just address those three things: understaffed, underfunded, overcrowded, and it would fix a lot of things. But we try all kinds of other plans that don't wind up working out because they're understaffed, underfunded, overcrowded. But anyway, yes, so I was and will be finishing a third book that's a different type of thing than I've ever done before, but I thought it was important. And like I said, a couple things happened right in a row. A scandal over in Iowa, I will say, that is something that would have happened back in the scary asylum years, or Willowbrook in New York, if anybody knows about that. That launched Geraldo Rivera's career in 1975. It was something like that when I heard it on the news that, oh my God, this has been going on from the Kennedys, Rosemary Kennedy, to Willowbrook in 75 to this small town in Iowa in 2023. Unacceptable, completely unacceptable. And somebody needs to blow the whistle, and that doesn't necessarily change anything, but raising awareness. I don't have any grandiose ideas about what it will do. But as we've seen in our culture in the last couple of years, when you have a lot of voices together, that's when there's change. One person can make a difference, but a crowd can make a hell of a difference because they're a voting block. And
yeah.
I kind of, you know, I kind of laugh because within each one of these groups that are taking up space right now talking about their issues and their victimization, and whether you agree or disagree with that, within every one of those, there are people with mental health issues. There are people with disabilities. There are people with substance abuse problems. But they aren't speaking to that segment for that segment of their population. That's not their agenda. Yet every single group has them. So when you look at that, you know, the different demographics that are talking right now, whether it's race, sex, whatever it might be that we're hearing about, four or five different groups that are chiming up, the Me Toos and everybody, within every single one of those groups are brain injury survivors, mental health issues, and substance abuse issues. And those, it would be helpful if all of those voices would address that within their community, you know, help all of the members of their community, because there's more going on than just the agendas that they're pushing. So that would be helpful. But if they're not going to do it, I'll just plant a couple seeds and a couple ideas, and hopefully people will care. And, you know, one thing in the old days, and then I'll shut up, is that in the old days, anything, meaning pre-1800 and even after that during the asylum years, and then think of alcoholism later, and now maybe think of mental health still in some cases, anything that was different than the status quo at that time was locked away. If it made the public feel uncomfortable, they just locked them away, out of sight, out of mind. And you didn't have to have a conscience about them or feel an obligation to deal with them. So in some ways, it's maybe worse right now that they're out on sidewalks in a lot of cities in tents, because to have everybody out there not locked away and to have people stepping over people and just ignoring it and not making it a priority to fix it. You know, we're making other countries a priority, yet we've got all of this stuff going on in our country, and we need to make it a priority and care, because it does impact all of us, whether it's indirectly or directly, and with the kind of stats on brain injury, on substance abuse, on mental health, chances are it will impact someone in your family or you at some time over some consequence. So it would behoove all of us to want that to be a priority for our own citizens. So that was the long way around. Yes, I'm writing a book, but I'll have to pick it up later. Life happened and it interrupted me. I can't spend the brain bucks on that right now.
So it sounds like a really important book, and it sounds like, you know, it's, you know, putting it together from scratch and studying it, you know, as you know, someone who's, you know, partly invested but not indoctrinated, is probably really useful perspective. I was going to suggest that you talk to my friend Larry, but I was like, you know, she should just write it, you know, because there's, you need to write it, I think, based on what, on your research. And but in any case, it's an important book. As far as the pause that you need to take, I mean, when my father died, I was told, you know, not to expect full functioning from myself for a year. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, give yourself grace, okay? Because when you lose your father, it's sort of like, you know, your relationships with your parents, you know, good or bad, are part of the foundations of your mental health, okay? You know, and
yeah.
when you lose a father or a mother, and it sounds like especially you're closer to your dad than your mom. It sounds like you had a more secure relationship from what we've discussed before. I mean, it's basically like you had an earthquake and one of the, you know, a foundational part of the house was destroyed. Okay. So
yeah.
you're, you know, barely hanging on. Okay. So, you know, you've got to take time to adjust. And what you're going through is more what you read. You read a definition for adjustment disorder. Okay. And that's kind of what you're going through, except it's related to grief. Okay. What I'm discussing tonight is adaptation disorder, which is something different. Okay. And then say, circling back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Yes. I watched it with my husband. I don't, you know, my husband watches all the games that he can because we don't have ESPN or whatever. So he watches all the games that he can. Now that we're in Florida, he doesn't get to see the Chiefs all the time, except when they're in the playoffs and stuff. So he watches on his phone somehow. And but yeah, we sat down and watched the game together. And I thought it was a remarkable game. I was very impressed with Patrick Mahomes and the whole team.
Yeah.
So, back when I lived in Kansas City, I don't know that we won
mm-hmm.
any Super Bowl during the 25 years I lived there. I lived there from 84 to 87 and then 88 to 97 and then from 2001 through 2015. So however many years that I don't remember that Kansas City actually won the Super Bowl. So it's kind of cool that we won two in the last 5 years. So that's cool.
Very cool. I know a lot of people from here and Kansas that took advantage of going to Florida in the middle of the winter to see the game. So, I mean,
Arizona, right? Arizona, yeah.
It was in Arizona. I'm sorry. It was,
yeah.
Arizona.
So anyway, so that's cool. And that also encouraged by the rules that they've put in place, you know, to make football safer. I mean, I'm sure it's not completely safe, but I am encouraged from what it was, you know, 7-8 years ago. It's a lot of improvements have been made. So, maybe
so they say.
More like 10 years ago. I'm sorry? Maybe 10 years ago.
I said,
the years are just flying by.
So they say.
Yeah. Well, I do think that things are better. It's not the same game that we grew up with. It's not exactly the same. Anyway. All right. So, and then I lost my, as far as understanding grief, yeah, I just told you that my dad died a year and a half ago. And so, you know,
yeah.
I kind of know what I don't want to hear. So, and I know that it's important to listen more than it is to say. So that's something I've had to learn along the way. So I'm glad that I was a good friend. I didn't realize that I did as well as that. So thank you, Kim. Any case,
thank you.
So let's go on to adaptation disorder. And it's not really, you're not going to find, if you put in the adaptation disorder and brain injury, you're not going to come and Google it. You're not going to come up with very much, okay? Because, but if you look up dysexecutive syndrome, you will, okay? So brain injury and dysexecutive syndrome you will get hit. But adaptation disorder is more like the effects of dysexecutive syndrome, okay? And I think it's more, and it's what Dr. Schutz and I, we're kind of focusing on. Like the program he did with me was self-therapy, for adaptive recovery, okay? And so, and we've discussed some of these concepts before, but I don't think I've ever said the words adaptation disorder. But it is kind of the hallmark for people who have brain injury. So any moderate to severe brain injury is going to have adaptation disorder. And probably about a third of people who have what they call mild injuries are going to have adaptation disorder. And it will be that subset of mild injuries that don't do well, okay, that do have chronic problems, that don't, that are, you know, are having trouble at work or trouble at home, or, you know, they're having, they're not bouncing back like they should. So the ones that bounce back, you know, and, you know, essentially can go on and live their lives, you know, they're not, they don't have adaptation disorder. But the ones who can't, part of that, it is an adaptation disorder, okay? So adaptation disorder means basically that, let's go back to what it means to adapt. I mean, basically, it's kind of a, you know, as you grow, I mean, the first thing that a child, when it enters the world, comes out of the baby, comes out of his mother's body, sees a bright light, you know, it's very uncomfortable, they're cold, okay, and they cry, right? Because
right.
They have to adapt. They have to adapt to this new world, okay? And basically all through your life, you're learning to adapt to new situations and new circumstances, okay? And but when you have a, we're going to say a significant brain injury, okay? So whether it's mild, mm-hmm. moderate, or severe, you know, and the subset of mild that doesn't, you know, that's not doing well, okay? Your brain, the pathway, the neural pathways that kind of set you up for, they're very susceptible to trauma, okay? And so what you get is like a, what they call frontal lobe dysfunction or dysexecutive syndrome or whatever. I'm not explaining this well. Basically, you stop learning, your brain stops learning to adapt on its own. Where as you're going through life up till the injury, okay, when new things come into your life, you kind of adjust, automatically adjust to things, okay, as you're going along, okay. The people who have brain injury tend, I mean, who have a significant injury, I'm going to say significant injury, where these pathways are affected, they stop adapting automatically as they used to, okay. And what happens is something, you know, something comes up in their world, something comes up in their day that doesn't go well, okay? And they don't pay enough attention, usually, like, you know, probably 19 times out of 20, okay, or 95% of the time, they don't really pay attention to what went wrong and how they, and figure out what, and actually connected to that, oh, something to do with my brain. And let's see if I can figure out what this tells me about my brain so I can do better next time, okay? Most, the part of the brain that kind of analyzes itself, it's called like the self-management system, is goes offline when you have a significant brain injury, okay? And so it's
yes.
like the brain doesn't evaluate itself properly, okay? It sees itself as the pre-injury self, okay? It doesn't feel any different, okay? And so, you know, after the confusion, you know, clears after they have a brain injury, you know, after, you know, 6 months to a year, most people feel okay, you know? Most people are, you know, ready to get on with their lives, okay? And they trust that, you know, they feel fine if, you know, unless they have, like, you know, speech deficits or motor deficits, you know, arms or legs or whatever, you know, where it's obvious. It's not obvious that the brain is on crutches. I mean, that the brain is...
right.
Yeah, I mean, the brain needs crutches, okay? The brain needs crutches, okay? But it's doing the best it can, okay? It's doing the best it can, but invariably, it's causing these what we've talked about in the past are brain injured moments, okay? And the reason why we have brain injured moments is that we're trying to live our lives using our new brain. Okay, and this is kind of confusing. The new brain is like a beat up Volkswagen bug. All right, okay. Where our pre-injury brains, our old brains, were like brand new Maseratis or you know, picture a red Porsche. Okay, you know, sleek, shiny, new. I mean, you know, you can go 100 miles an hour, okay, in whatever, however many, you know, seconds, okay? I mean,
yeah.
That, you know, our brains before the brain injury are more like that, okay? So, some of the cars these days can even drive themselves practically, okay? They have all the bells and whistles, and, you know, they don't have any, you know, they don't have any problems with their engine. They can go as fast as they want. Have, you know, they're very, what's the word? Not agile, but, you know, you can control them very, very easily, turn on a dime, all that stuff, okay? But a beat-up old Volkswagen bug, you know, you can't go very fast, okay? It could break down along the way, okay? It can get you to your destination, but it won't be in style, okay? And
right.
The person, you know, probably any person can, you go to a new car lot and you buy a car, any new car actually, you can pretty much, as long as you learn what all the knobs and everything mean, you know, you get in the car, you drive, and you don't really think anything about it. Everything's working perfectly, okay? But if your brain is unique, okay? The injury in your, after brain injury, your brain is unique, okay? And it needs to be operated in a very, you have to adjust the way you drive to your brain, okay? So where before you could use your brain, you were like an automatic, okay? But in brain injury, you have to, it's like your Volkswagen bug is a stick shift, okay? And if you don't change the gears at the right time, your car is going to stall. You're going to, make that sound when you screech the brake, when you don't do the clutch properly, whatever, have to be very careful about how you would drive that Volkswagen bug. And that's how we have to be. We have to be very careful in how we live our lives, okay? If we want to optimize our recovery, we need to be very careful and adapt the way that we drive. And what I mean by drive, I mean live your everyday, okay? You know, you can't do it without thinking anymore. Okay, now you have to pay attention, okay, to the circumstances and the situations around you, okay? When you walk into a new circumstance or situation or switch tasks, you need to think about, is this a hard task or is this an easy task for my brain now, okay? And if it's easy, you can proceed kind of on automatic pilot, okay? You can kind of do it like you normally would. But if it's a different situation, if there's something that's hard, you know, people with brain injuries, they don't automatically recognize what things are hard for them now, okay? And so they run into situations, and often, many times they repeat these situations without learning from them, okay? And one of the things, I'll just say, one of the things that I thought about, you know, when I was thinking about presenting this, you know, a very common, I know how long it takes for me to get up and get ready in the morning, okay? I pretty much have it down to a T, okay? All right? And I can do it, I can do without a whole lot of thought because it's on automatic. Once something's on a routine, okay, it is kind of an easy task. Once it gets to that, you know, once you've developed your routine and you've honed it, even for a person with brain injury, following that routine goes well. But if there's something different about that routine, okay, and one of the things that I used to, like when I would go to a conference or something in another city, say in a hotel, I would plan on waking up like 45 minutes ahead of time before I would need to leave. So if the conference is in the same hotel and it started at 8, I'd get up at 7, okay? And then I would find 7:45 came, and I was nowhere near ready, okay? And I'm like, what happened? Where did the time go, okay? Well, what happened is I didn't treat this as a hard task for my brain. When you are in a hotel and you're getting your things out of a suitcase and everything's in a different place and all that, it no longer becomes an easy task for your brain. Okay, that is a hard task.
Right.
So now I have learned to build in an extra half hour. Okay, I need to get up half an hour before I normally would, because I know,
yeah.
And I've got to get my clothes laid out. And I mean, I can't be, you know, trying to find things in the morning. I have to have things like laid out at night. Situation that occurred to me many, many, many times. And I didn't learn from it until I learned about that, you know, until I learned to pay attention to when, you know, these brain injured moments were occurring. Okay. So when you can do something on routine and do it successfully, you know, it's an easy task for your brain. But if you can't, there are situations that change it. Okay, so for like in Kansas City, there were many times that I got ready to go outside and, you know, it looked like a sunny day outside, but it was spring or fall. And I go outside and, oh, it's colder than I expected. Okay, so I have to go back in the house and get a sweater or, you know what I'm saying? I was not, you know, there was something different about the day, okay, that changed my routine, okay. So we need to pay attention to when something doesn't, we need to pay attention to our brain injured moments, okay, and many of them are like lapses in attention, okay, and the number one thing you can do to, is to pay attention to what's going well and what's going wrong in your life, okay? And, it's best to do it as you're going along, okay? But maybe just at the end of the day, think, you know, what didn't go as well as I expected today? And then think about it and see, you know, say, okay, what does this tell me about, you know, why was this a hard task, okay? And we actually have to, you know, where before your brain would automatically adjust for that, okay? But no, it doesn't do that any longer, okay? So we have to be more deliberate. So conduct an analysis, okay? What didn't go wrong? Why didn't it go wrong? What can I do to make it to help it go better next time, okay? And for me, you know, for the hotel thing, extra half hour, okay?
Yeah.
About before, like when I go into a parking garage, first, if I've got music playing in the car, I turn it off immediately. Like going in a parking garage, okay? Or if I'm trying to find, if I'm on a road or, you know, traffic, you know, a road that I've not been on before, the music goes off, okay? I can't be half, you know, I need my full attention, okay? In a parking garage, especially at the VA, there are veterans darting here and there, okay? And
yeah.
Pulling out, looking, okay? And it's like you need to have your full attention, okay? And a person who's, you know, if before my injury, my brain would still be paying sort of attention, okay, to what's going wrong. But a person with brain injury, they tend not, their brains don't recognize the things that are going, you know, going on often until it's too late, okay? I have some things written, I mean, I have some verbs, some, like, paragraphs written. Let me kind of say, so, you know, I cannot, a brain injury survivor cannot depend, A brain injury survivor cannot depend on the automatic functions of their damaged brains to navigate the situations that have become hard for them. But they don't automatically recognize what situations have become wrong with them, okay? Even when educated about their impairments, okay? Like a lot of people with brain injury say, oh, yeah, I'm more forgetful now, okay? But too often, okay, when someone tells, you know, when they hear something, they're like, oh, yeah, I understand that. I won't forget that, okay? And yet, 2 or 3 days later, they've forgotten all about what was said, okay? You know, they might promise, you know, like, you know, promise to, you know, their child to go that they would do something on Saturday, and then Saturday comes and the child remembers, but you've forgotten, okay? And why? Because you didn't write it down. You didn't treat, you know, before the brain injury, you would have remembered that probably, okay, most likely. But after the brain injury, our prospective memories especially is like the planning ahead kind of stuff is you got to be very careful. So I don't ever – I mean, I've learned to never by studying my brain injured moments for so many years now, I learned about them about 10 years ago. I have learned, I now automatically, okay, but I have learned to recognize what situations I could, like today, I opened 4 emails, okay, that require follow-up, right? And one is for a ladies' retreat at church. And they said, if you sign up, you need to put a deposit of $35, okay? Well, I got an email today saying that, and then you pay the rest when you got to the retreat and when it happened. And so I paid my $35, and then I was going to pay the rest of the retreat. Well, I got an email this morning saying, oh, we got it wrong. It's $35 per night. So you've got to do each email.
Oh.
So since 2 nights, you have to do... You know, you have to pay the other $35, and also, you know, the rest of the money is due in mid-April. The retreat's at the end of April, okay? So the rest of the money is due mid-April. So you have to give it like by April 16th, okay? And I'm like, oh no, this is hard for my brain, okay? Because once I get to my job, once I go home or whatever, if I don't write it down, okay, I am going to forget. So I've got to put it in my, you know, in my, I do have a paper calendar that I use. I've got to put it there and preferably also in my phone so that I don't forget. Okay. So I put, I wrote it into my paper calendar, but I also, that I'm going to pay the whole thing on Sunday. Okay, I'm not going to try to remember to do the $35 now and the other $75. The other $40 per night. I'm just going to pay the whole thing off this Sunday. That's it. Make this an easier task because there's no way I'm going to, you know, it makes it much harder to have to remember to do it twice, okay? But you put it into, you know, I wrote it down right away, okay? There were a couple of, I forget what, but there were like 3 or 4 things from those emails about, four different tasks came up, okay? And the only one I can remember now is that one. But I had to, like, take the time to, like, sit down and make a plan because if I think that I'm going to remember, I'm not, okay? Unless it's something that I will encounter in my everyday thing, I'm not going to remember these one-off things that are not part of my everyday, okay? So, So that's
I've had a lot of experience with that lately. I get it.
Okay, and so over time, people with brain injury do start to recognize some of these things. Okay, but they don't do it as they need to do it. They need to pay. If you want to optimize your recovery, you should take this very seriously. Okay, and another thing that people with brain injury do is and it's not their fault. Okay, so the way their brains work is they tend to avoid when when something's hard and doesn't go well, sometimes their brain decides, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. Okay? So let's say they go back to a job that they were successful at before. Okay? And, you know, they go back and they still have the knowledge to do the job. They still have the skills to do the job. But somehow it's not gelling. Okay? Maybe there's a frustration tolerance. Your frustration tolerance, or maybe your interaction with people isn't what it needs to be. Maybe you're too slow, or maybe you're rushing through trying to do it like you used to, okay?
Yeah.
And you're making mistakes because you're not paying enough attention, okay? So the number one strategy for dealing with attention lapses is slow down, okay? And if you're, you know, if your job doesn't, you know, but what tends to happen is people will give up on themselves. They'll give up on doing things, and they'll tell themselves, oh, that's too hard. I mean, they'll make a justification saying, often the brain will not accept responsibility for itself. It's sort of like a psychological thing, the ego, okay? And, you know, they'll make excuses for themselves, or they'll say, you know, so-and-so did this, okay, that may, they'll try to point out something about this, you know, the situation or someone around them or whatever. It's not my brain's fault. It's everyone else's fault, okay, that this didn't go well for me, okay? And so what we need to do is take responsibility for our own brains and our own mistakes and learn from them and study them and don't avoid things. And if you find something hard, don't give up on it, okay? Sit down, you know, study it out. See what, you know, figure out what you can do to be successful at this thing. So often, you know, often when something unexpected happens, because a lot of times these things happen and it's unexpected, okay? And we kind of get all flustered, okay? And so kind of like you get very strong emotions, you know, and you're like, you know, how could I be so stupid, whatever. And like when I used to lose my umbrella, I can't remember how many umbrellas I lost, okay, before I did my cog rehab and realized how messed up my brain actually was. But yeah, I would get so upset when I would lose something, okay, and, you know, especially like my umbrella, and I would beat myself up, and I would kind of like my brain would go into shock and not even be able to think about anything because I'm so upset about this umbrella thing. Okay, I don't know if anybody else there can relate, but we our emotions are stronger. Okay, the negative emotions, it's easier for, you know, we don't have as much control over them. And so when we get upset, we get really upset, okay? And it's hard for us to calm down. But if I say, okay, I lost this umbrella. I know exactly what happened. You know, it was raining when I got on the bus, but by the time I got to my destination, it was sunny and I forgot it sitting on the seat next to me, okay? And, you know, better yet, it would be better for me to say when I sit down, okay, you know, where am I going to put this umbrella, and also make a mental note, a strong mental note that when I get up from my seat, I'm going to look behind at my seat. I'm going to look around me and make it a habit so that I will notice that I'll make sure to get my umbrella, okay. But it doesn't, you know, when I do something like that anymore, I don't get as flustered as I used to because I know exactly what happened, okay? I can figure out exactly what happened, exactly where I went wrong, exactly where I didn't recognize this as a hard situation, okay? Sometimes what's easy on a, you know, on a Monday becomes very hard on a Friday night when you're depleted after work, okay? So learning to recognize, you know, self-monitor, self-manage, you know, we have a lot of different things like attention. We have attention. Our attention's not as good as it used to be. The working memory's not as good. The long-term memory's not as good. The prospective memory is not as good. We have a less of ability to control over our emotions. We tend to have impulsivity. We have good days, good brain days. We have bad brain days. You know, we don't pay enough attention to the situations around us. We can, like, get stuck on doing a task, you know, and kind of, like, or you know, or follow the shiny object rather than focus on what we're supposed to be doing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we,
yeah.
You know, there are a lot of ways that our brains can trip us up. Okay. But they will continue to do so. Okay. As long as we don't pay attention, say, oh, this is, you know, this didn't go as well as what it should have done, and write it down. Okay. It's really important to write these things down. Okay. You know, say, okay, what does this teach me about, you know, how could I've operated my brain better? Okay. What, you know, and then, you know, so that when you encounter the same sort of situation next time, you kind of have like a little bit of a head start into, you know, what can I do? What, you know, put in place so this will not happen ever again. And like I was going through the cognitive rehab material that I had from when I did my rehab with Larry and Dr. Schutz in 2013. I was going through that, and I was looking at I wrote like 150 brain injured moments during those 8 weeks. So, I mean, I guess it's not that many a day, okay? But he said it was a record. So I guess it was an average of 3 a day that I was writing every day. So, but I'm looking at these brain injured moments, and I'm like, I never do that anymore, you know? But it was something that I did then, okay? Because I have better control of the way I operate my brain, okay? And I've learned to fully acknowledge, okay, that my brain is messed up. And I have the, you know, it's hard for someone who has a lot of ego to do this, okay? They just want to, you know, you have to have a degree of humility to be able to, I guess, accept the shame, you know, that you feel when something doesn't go as well as it should, and go through this process. Because if you try to, like, avoid the shame, you're not going to make progress. You're not going to adapt to you're not going to adapt your brain, the way you run your brain to your life, and you'll continue to live in a syndrome of partial disability. So I have a talk that I gave at the Federal Interagency Conference for Brain Injury in 2018. And I, you know, it's like 100 slides. It was a 90-minute block of time. So it was like 100 slides. And I had this all laid out really, really nicely, what adaptation disorder is and things. But where was I going with this? I forgot where I was going. That's another thing I tend to do with brain injury. Like, I think about where I'm going to go, and then I kind of take the circuitous route, and then I lose myself on the way. Ah,
well, you talked about your talk, the talk that you had with the 100 lines, and then kind of...
Just before that, there was something. We're talking about the shame. Okay.
Yes.
The shame. Yeah, you have to be able to, you know, be able to kind of look at it clinically, okay? Instead of like you would a math problem, okay? You got something wrong in the math, on a math, like, oh yeah, I made a mistake, okay? And you don't take it personally, okay? But you learn from that mistake. You look at those numbers and like, okay, redo the problem and say, oh yeah, that's where I made my mistake. Okay. So now when something when something doesn't happen right, I'm like, okay, you know, I don't get all flustered and very, very upset about this. I can say, okay, I need to learn from this situation here? What, you know, this is what happened. What does this tell me about my brain? How can I plan to do better next time? Okay. And if I don't do better next time, then I need to adjust my plan. Okay. All right. So here I'm going through some of what I wrote. All right, so in this talk, I talk about Apollo 13, okay? And what time is it? It's 11 o'clock, okay. So if you remember, the movie Apollo 13 is based on a true event that actually happened, where the crew, something happened. There was something I forget now exactly went wrong, because I just read it a few weeks ago, because I was preparing for another little talk. But basically, something went wrong, and they couldn't, they had to abandon the, landing on the moon, and it became very, very questionable if they would even make it to Earth. Okay, and so they could not depend on the computers or the procedures that they had set in place to finish it is late at night, and I'm having trouble even coming up with my words now. I'm sorry. I didn't get enough sleep last night, which I should have, and I should have taken a nap when I came home. Now I'm seeing it, that I'm not able to come up with my words. Okay.
Well, it happens. Just do what you said. So go slow.
So basically, thank you, Kim. Just like Apollo 13, I'm going to read this, the crew could not rely on damaged equipment to land safely.
Yeah.
So the brain injury survivor cannot depend on the automatic functions of their damaged brains to navigate the situations that have become hard for them. Even when they're educated about their impairments, you're more forgetful, your attention's not as good as your memory, they don't actually do anything differently, okay? They try to run, if they never used a calendar before, they tend not to use a calendar now, okay? If they, they receive the information, okay, and they might say, yeah, okay. They might assent to it, but they don't actually take it into their psyche to actually figure out how these impairments are showing up in their lives, okay? So even when they're educated about their impairments, they never figure out how to prevent their brain aging moments. And they run into situations where they seemingly inexplicably fail. So this ultimately results in a syndrome of persistent partial disability, which is what I had, okay? And they never understand why, okay? They experience a loss of self-efficacy described by one survivor as follows. And I'm going to read something that was written by Jeff Sebel. Do you know who Jeff Sebel is? He wrote a book.
I don't think
he's a long,
so.
He's a long-term survivor of a brain injury from the 70s, and he was pretty young when it happened. And I got to know him from some posts or blogs that he was posting. And what did I do with the paper I had this written on? I thought I had this in order. Okay. Here we go, the loss of self, okay? So I'm going to read, this is what he wrote.
Good one.
Okay. The inability to function as we used to in any number of situations causes angst, depression, and confusion. When we try to use our skills that have been damaged, we may find ourselves unable to perform them correctly or adequately. This can trigger a domino effect that leaves us questioning first our abilities and behavior, and then our capacity to function and survive in what is often a hostile and unforgiving world. The changes we face are confusing and unnerving. The adjustments we need to make are a mystery, and we are thrust headlong into a battle to reclaim our lives, but are unable to comprehend or learn the new rules. Okay, and it's from a book by Jeff Sabell, and I've forgotten the title of the book. I have it at the end of this presentation, but I didn't print out the whole presentation. I just printed out some pages from it.
How do you spell his last name?
S-E-B-E-L-L. And it's a very short book, but it's...
I do know who that is. Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, he writes really well, and I love how he described that. So the thing is, another thing is, there is a blind spot in the medical model, okay? Is a neurologist going to teach you about how to learn to adjust to your new brain? Is a psychiatrist going to? They can give you some anti-anxiety stuff. They can give you some antidepressant stuff, right? They can give you meds. But are they going to help you figure out how to run your new brain? No. Okay. A rehab doctor, they're not going to help you. Okay. Speech language, those who are lucky enough to get some cognitive rehab after their brain injury, you know, it's usually 1 week or two, okay, of speech language pathology. And too often they're trying to, like, exercise your muscles, they're trying to make your attention stronger or your memory stronger or whatever. It's not the point of making it stronger. You're still able to pay attention. You're still a bit able to use memory, but you need to learn what situations are going to trip you up, okay? And only you can figure that out, okay? Only you can know the potholes that are in your life. Well, that's a good analogy. Okay, so you're driving.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be a very careful driver of your new, which is a beat-up old Volkswagen Bug kind of brain, okay? And there's potholes in the road, okay, that somehow didn't exist before, okay? But now, you know, when you run into a pothole, when something doesn't go as it should, you need to stop. You need to write it down. You need to pay attention to what went wrong. You know, what does it tell me? You know, why did it go wrong? Okay, was I rushing? Was it late at night? Was it because I didn't sleep enough? Was it because I was very, very hungry and was getting hypoglycemic and I wasn't paying enough attention? I mean, what was different about this? What was about this situation that made me susceptible to this brain injury moment at right now? Okay, was I not careful enough? Okay, did I have my music on and I wasn't watching for the potholes? Okay, and so you're the only person can adapt the functioning, how you drive to your brain, okay? And that's why this concept of self-therapy is so important, okay? Because as long as you – so I'm going through some of these slides from this presentation. So brain injury moments result from a survivor trying to use their impaired brain in the normal way to navigate a hard task or situation, okay? So, they still have this old concept of themselves as having the Ferrari kind of brain, but they need to accept, okay, to learn and accept that they now have a Volkswagen kind of brain, okay, and learn to adjust the way they use their brain to accordingly, okay? Another aircraft event that occurred it was a Challenger. It was the space shuttle Challenger, was it? Okay. And, you know, many of us who, I think it happened in 1905 or something like that. I don't remember exactly when it happened. It happened when I was in college. Okay. 1985, 1986, something like that. And, you know, everybody was watching this launch and all of a sudden it blew up. And what they found out afterwards was that there was an O-ring, okay? And I don't know how big this O-ring was, but it wasn't much bigger than your hand, okay? There was an O-ring that was the material it was made out of wasn't the right thing for the temperatures that were going that was going to be exposed to, okay?
Oh,
so that O-ring cracked or something, and it was just this one little piece, okay, that caused the brain, you know, caused the explosion, okay? And so we need to pay attention to those, so like many people with brain injury, they start living lives, they cut, you know, kind of cutting out the things from their lives that don't go well, okay? And they start living lives that are more and more isolated, okay? Sometimes, I'm not saying everybody does, but tend to, you know, become more isolated, you know, like, oh, I can't go to that party because the lights are too bright or people are too loud or whatever, and rather than trying to figure out a way. So they adapt life where they can do things, you know, where they're not challenging themselves and they're not, and they can live like within their routines and things go well. Okay. But the thing that's wrong is like this O-ring. Okay. And this O-ring for us is learning to pay attention to how our brain's functioning, okay? So we need to revise our self-concept. So I have this, I wish I could show you these slides from my presentation, okay? So on this slide, I have a straight line, like an arrow, okay? And it's a before the injury, and it's a straight line with a little arrow at the end, okay? And then after the injury, I have like a dashed line. If you think about like a dashed line, that like it's on the road, okay? So a dashed line, there's no arrow, okay? Mm-hmm. So I have after injury discontinuity, okay? So I would live my life, and then I would run to a brain injured moment, and then I would, you know, it would kind of stall me for a little bit, okay? And then I would live my life again, and then run into another brain injury moment. And sometimes I could have 5 or 6, you know, brain injury moments in an hour, okay? And when you have all these things happening, it's like it's hard to get going in your life. And it's like you stop making forward direction, moving forward properly. So I have this dashed line and discontinuity written on top of it, after injury discontinuity, and I no longer have the arrow at the end because I'm not really making progress. I just kind of bumping in like a ping pong ball, you know, bumping into the wall, trying, and then, you know, ultimately going down the drain, you know. But after I learned to run my brain differently, I have the third line, okay, and the third line is still a dashed line, okay, but it has these little curved lines that are connecting the end of one dash to the other dash, okay. So can you imagine what I'm talking about? It's sort of like okay, sort of like C's, okay. So at the end of the one dash, you have the one end of the C, and then the other end of the C goes to the beginning of the next, and then I have an arrow at the end. So my life, you know, I have restored continuity, okay? So my life started moving forward again, okay, in a direction. It doesn't look like it used to, okay? I'm not going to ever get that Ferrari back, okay? But I have learned to drive my Volkswagen, you know, my beat up old Volkswagen kind of brain. And in a way that I'm able to, you know, to manage my life successfully now far more successfully than I used to. Okay. And so becoming your own self-therapist, means that you are the agent of adaptation. Okay.
Yes.
By adapting the way you run your brain to your brain, okay? You learn to prevent brain injured moments. You minimize disability. You optimize your recovery. You restore self-efficacy, okay? Instead of, you know, thinking what's wrong with me and all that different stuff. And you start having hope for the future, okay? And so just like the Apollo 13, you know, by careful planning and deliberate conscious control, they were able to have a safe landing despite damaged equipment. We too, as survivors, can learn to run our brains and have safe landings despite having damaged equipment as well. So I have a picture of the space of another space shuttle going off, not Challenger at that point. So at the end of that presentation, it was another presentation. I have like victims, survivors, or heroes, okay? So, you know, what are we going to choose? You know, the survivor can choose to be a victim, okay, and say, oh, woe is me, okay? They can say, oh, I'm a survivor, okay? But still live lives of partial disability, persistent partial disability, or they can become their hero, you know, by carefully planning and taking deliberate conscious control of their brain. They can maximize their own recoveries and, you know, see themselves as heroes. And actually, you know, before I did my rehab, I felt, I don't know, when I did that first week with Larry, I felt so inadequate. I cried and cried and cried because I was trying to live my life, you know, I was trying to live my, comparing myself to my colleagues, right? And also right. to my kids, you know, I was surrounded by really smart people, okay? You know, geniuses all around me, all right? And I'm trying to function and, you know, do things exactly like they do, okay? And running into problems over and over again. But, you know, by the end of the 8 weeks that I did with Larry were, you know, where he put me into situation after situation after situation where I had brain injury moments all the time, okay? You know, basically that was one of the primary features of the program is to give me hard tasks that were disguised as easy tasks, okay? And unless I did take deliberate conscious control, I would mess them up, okay? So, but at the same time, he would provide me, you know, with compensation strategies, you know, and an understanding of how to use them and, you know, basically, I learned how damaged my brain was. I learned it was far more damaged than I ever could imagine, okay? But at the same time, I gained hope. And actually, I watched my graduation ceremony. I have it. It was posted on Facebook, I mean, on YouTube, and I don't know how to have somebody, because now I've saved it, and I don't know how to tell anybody to find it. But I tell this. You know, in my graduation, I tell this, you know, how I was felt so inadequate, okay? But I saw really how heroic, you know, my life had been, okay? And I'm not saying this, you know, I had done really well, so, you know, figuring out what I did on my own, okay? Obviously, I needed a lot more help, okay? But I needed to do it. I needed to learn what was wrong with my brain. I needed to learn how to run my brain better. And I was like, I was so hopeful. I was like, you know, I don't know how this is going to, you know, how this is going to change my situation at work, okay? But I hope, I said, I think I'm going to do better. And you know what? Immediately when I got back to Kansas City, I was able to do my job so much better. Okay. In fact, one of the residents said, Dr. Romana, you're making me feel so stupid. You're so, you know, you are, my brain was functioning because I was learning to consciously operate my brain. Okay. And I had learned to like, you know, avoid some distractions. And, you know, I was adapting my just learning that I had a damaged brain and learning that, you know, to pay attention and to fix, you know, to make things better. And my boss said that the moment I came back, from that moment, he was now able to recognize that I was any different than my colleagues. Where before, it was kind of obvious that there was something different, not really to people outside the lab, okay, but the people I was working with every day kind of understood that something was different, okay?
Right.
But he said that the difference between me and anybody else completely went away after that, okay? And he said that, yeah, you still have it, you know, 2 years later when I actually was getting ready to move to Florida, you know, and he says, you know, Maria, your work is fully satisfactory, okay? And I'm like, fully satisfactory? You know? And he says, yes, Maria, you still have a, you know, late case from time to time, but no more or less than anyone else. So by learning to run my brain, my beat up old Volkswagen brain in a new way with, you know, careful planning and deliberate conscious control and learning to pay attention to my brain injury moments, I learned to adapt to my new brain, the way I run my brain to my, you understand. I can't come up with the words.
I do.
That's the thing, this adaptation disorder, too often people with brain injury are blissfully unaware, okay, that they have this adaptation disorder. It's like the brain doesn't want to admit it. The brain doesn't see it. The brain avoids it. And if something goes wrong, you know, they get flustered or upset, but they actually never really deal with it. So that's why this concept of adaptation disorder is so important. So I encourage everybody who's listening to start paying attention to their brain injury moments, write them down, figure out how you can function better and how you can avoid this, make a plan to prevent the same mistake from happening again. So anyway.
No, I really and appreciate that, because without going into a long story, my career, what ended my career was just that. You know, it was, I went back to my job afterward, but you know, basically I was told, in effect, I was broken, I nearly died, saved my life, and so I thought I was broken and now I'm fixed, and I went back to my job and tried to perform at the same pace, level, everything that I did before, and I couldn't, and then because there was no one... they didn't make computers back then. There was no brain injury radio. I hadn't found a support group. No, never knew anybody that had a brain injury before. The traditional medical model, as you said, didn't invite, you know, any of these compensatory strategies or even acknowledge that this thing might happen like you just did. And it left me super sick after a year of just continuing to beat my head on the wall, trying to do something that I couldn't do the same anymore. And it didn't occur to me, you know, things like you taught me later, you know, compensatory strategies and last week we had a good show on strengths and skills and resilience, you know, different concepts like that I just hadn't been introduced to in that context before. And so by continuing to try and not adapt but to operate at a level that I couldn't anymore, that last year was a living hell. I got gastro issues and wound up getting my gallbladder out. A couple months later, I got pneumonia. A couple months later, I got shingles all over my face. The depression and anxiety kept getting worse and worse. And especially as I was getting these different physical ailments, I was wondering, like, having that feeling of when the other shoe would drop. And the other thing that was going on is I was living a double life. I never really copped to, I probably didn't know the extent of the damage that I still had either. Neither did, you know, my folks. They had the same thing, you know. She had this problem. She had open brain surgery. She got better. And, of course, your loved ones would like to think that you got fixed, you know, because it was such a horrific ordeal when it was going on, right? So we'd all like to think that we got fixed. And so we operate in the fixed strategy. And I didn't, I was living a double life. And that was the other thing that was, that didn't help, is I was not only doing that work thing, like you were talking about, putting that on myself, but I was also living a double life and not being honest with other people or myself. And it broke me. You know, after a year, it completely broke me. And I left one day. This is how bad it was, because most people would probably know by now, I'm a really responsible, ethical, honest person. If I say I'm going to do something, I will. Now, leaving out the things if you, you know, forget it sometimes. But that generally doesn't happen with me unless I'm really on operation overload, and so I'll never say never, but as a rule, that's the kind of person I am. But, you know, one Friday at that job, at my career, it was a Friday, and I had a corner office in the front of the building, and there were some boxes. I was in a new wing that they were just building for the investment department, and to keep us away from the bankers. It's a different culture. That's a whole nother story. But I was alone, and there was a bunch of boxes left from supplies, you know, that they were bringing in to do the construction. And just out of nowhere, after this year of hell, where I was in a very, very bad place, worse than I've really talked about, I went and got a couple of those boxes, and I packed up the stuff I wanted, and I walked out of work that Friday, and I never went back. I never called. I never had an exit interview. I've never seen any of those people again. And if I have seen any of them, I haven't recognized them. That was such a painful experience on so many levels that, aside from being able to tell you the story, I wiped the slate completely clean of that experience as far as, like, the people that were there, and not remembering them, never going back to talk to them, just getting up and leaving. And, you know, the day that I did that, it was a matter of saving my life. It was a matter of survival.
Exactly.
You know,
you did what you needed to do. You did the only thing you knew how to do. I mean, you were in a situation that was impossible at that point. And you didn't, like I said, you were trying to use your brain like you normally did, okay? And you were not being successful. I suspect that if you had, you know, learned something, you know, learned to, like you said that when you started doing the brain injury radio, you started learning all about your brain injury and learning things from other people, and you learned strategies. You learned, you know, this, what was the thing that you have, the three A's? Acceptance? What are the three A's that you say?
Awareness, acceptance.
Yes.
action and adaptation. So you become aware of something, you accept this new reality or the reality, you take action to be able to adapt to that environment. And that's kind of how I learned it. If I knew any of even the things I learned in the first year, let alone I'm 13 years down the road at Brain Injury Radio, it would have been a whole different ball game. But I never would have had the opportunity to be here and learn if I would have stayed there and crawled down a black hole for the rest of my life. So that's why I feel very committed and have all this time for other people, because I'm well aware of what you're talking about and appreciate so much all of the things that you've brought to the table. And that slowing down is a really big one. And, you know, even just now, you know, doing all that work I was talking about earlier for my mom, you know, I had everything in a folder. I was trying to be neat. I was trying to go slow. I was trying to take notes on everything, all these people that I was talking about in this unfamiliar terrain under duress. And I was thinking, as I was collecting this information and giving it to her, that it was then her responsibility to write down these answers that I was getting. And so weeks later, when she came back to me to ask me questions, and a lot of them had to do with numbers because it's tax season coming up. So there were some unreimbursed medical expenses and things. I'm not good at numbers anyway, okay? And remembering number sequences is not the same as remembering to get your umbrella, you know? You can't check the seat around you for number sequences. And I really was agitated and went through my papers kind of like you were feeling a minute ago. What did I do with that paper? You know, I know I was organized. I was organized, you know.
Yeah.
I had my file with my shit together when I was working on it, but but I was, you know, doing a million different tasks at the same time that I had never done before under duress. And when I you know, in my mind, it went off my desk to hers, and then she didn't
follow up
pay any attention or whatever. Yeah, follow up on it, and then wanted that stuff for me, and then approached me like, you know, well, I had had the answer once. It would be on, you know, at the top of my head to be able to just spit that out. Well, it wasn't. It meant going back and retracing all of those steps and looking through those notes again. And I did, you know, a lot of stuff was really neat, but as I was talking to people on the phone getting answers, I was jotting things like on the back of pieces of paper. I didn't have a fresh piece of paper with me. So it was really stressful to go back and, you know, the expectation I'd be able to instantly recall this stuff. It was not as bad as doing it over the first time, but going to find it got me so agitated and pissed off, frankly, at me and at her and at the situation, I guess, that it just made me really tired, you know, and I've slept a lot more lately, and I did, for the first time in 13 years, take a little time off here, and I took a little time off of an unrelated support group Zoom thing that I go to once a week, and I just kind of shut down and did the isolating that you're talking about, because the sensory overload was killing me, you know, in a different way. I knew, though.
Yeah, you're dealing with grief too, okay? And so that level of grief, when you lose someone that special to you, it's destabilizing for your brain, okay? In a way that you're really not conscious of, okay? So don't your normal output, your normal, you know, for a while. Okay. So I'm not saying, you know,
well, it's
if you need
weird
to isolate,
when you got two people though going through it, because they have the expectation that you'll be able to do that when you don't. And that's one problem of people that don't get brain injury to begin with from the very beginning. You know, because it's 2023 now. It was 2022 when I was doing this, and I've had my brain injury since 1995. There's people that still don't get it. And the fact that they were in grief and couldn't do it meant that I was supposed to do it. Okay,
yeah.
Well, I did that. I would defer my grief. And I heard another one of those YouTubes I was telling you about earlier. Another one was 8 ways to determine that you're not dealing with your grief. And one of them was excessive busyness. You know, just filling your life with so much busy that you're focus-oriented and it takes your brain away, you know, from the grief part of it. And even though to be able to articulate what I had to say to all the different people I had to say it with to do what I had to do, I couldn't afford to break into tears and get emotional, so I had to objectify the situation as a project and split the personalization part from it, which was interesting. But I gotta say, I've learned a lot, whether that was healthy or not. At that moment, it got done what
needed. You needed to do that at that time. You didn't have the time and space to process, you know, your emotions. And really, to process your emotions, you need to pay attention to them. And when you're trying to do cognitive stuff, I mean, all this, you know, these arrangements and everything, you can't be processing. You have to kind of wall it off, you know, to be able to compartmentalize, to be able to get through it. You know, I think you did a wonderful job, okay? I mean...
Well, I learned that here. Otherwise, I would have been in the same position as the other person. And I'm not judging. I'm just saying I've gotten the opportunity to get the skills now to know what I need to do to get through each one of these situations, like what you were talking about. And it's not perfect, you know, in that show about skills and strengths and stuff. You know, I often say that I was like 3 years into, that was such a blow, that career thing I just talked to you about, that when I wound up, you know, writing my first book after that was my brain injury story, and that's what led to coming to radio. I feel like I was given stepping stones, you know, and one would be put in front of me, and, you know, when it was time to take the next step, another one would be put in front of me. I feel like I was getting a lot of divine help there.
Sounds like it.
But it took me 3 years to realize, you know, I thought I had burnt my whole motherboard when I left that job. And it took me 3 years, which is a little embarrassing, but I'll forgive myself for that. One time I'm sitting there on the radio talking about something with somebody. That's direct enough. What I realized is that my strengths, if you will, being able to network and talk, obviously, help educate or bring in experts that can help educate and teach, you know, different skills and things like that. And then network, you know, being able to network and explain things to people in a way that they can understand them, and find guests that speak in a way that people can understand them, And a lot of that is other brain injury survivors and not doctors who speak over people's heads and do no good, you know, to have them on because nobody understands what they're saying. That I still have, that's the same skill set I used in sales, you know, networking, yeah. researching, mm-hmm. educating. And 3 years into brain injury radio, I was like, I didn't burn my motherboard. I didn't have the skills to handle it in that venue that I had been in for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And now I'm not, you know, and now I'm not. I've learned how you do that kind of thing. So this is really invaluable for people because I say, you know, in the process of recovery from brain injury that, you know, it takes a long time. And some people are fortunate and able to go back to exactly the way they were before. Lucky folks don't have to learn a lot of this stuff that we're talking about. But a lot of people, when they find out they can't go back like I did initially and be exactly who they were before for themselves and everyone around them that expects it, you know, we lose people in back of that. And it's also mm-hmm. a dark hole because people can't see what's in front of them. You know, they don't have that message of you just gave and faith, really, that if you practice these things, these compensatory strategies and learn about adaptation disorder and some of these things. You know, I get a lot of feedback from people that listen to the shows and then they're like, oh, I listened to that show with Dr. Maria the other night on adaptation disorder. And that's me, you know, I've got that. That's what's going on in my life. And, you know, now I know some of the things that I can do to mitigate some of the challenges, you know, that have been bringing me to my knees. Well, I wish that would have been around for me between 1995 and 2012, but I'm blessed that from 2012 till now, I get to keep interacting in a place where I feel more comfortable now than I did back then, with my own people
mm-hmm.
who get it. But I also have a lot of people that aren't exactly our own people that are speaking to different things, probably like your Larry, you know, people like that who are in the know but aren't necessarily survivors and feel perfectly capable and comfortable as much as talking with you, talking with them. And, you know, there was a time that was taken away. And, you know, again, I had that skill in sales, whether someone was a mechanic or, you know, owned a Fortune 500 company, they all put on their pants the same way in the morning. And they all have ups and downs in their life. And I looked at them all equally and treated them that way. And
yeah.
That's pretty much how things are here. So I really appreciate you bringing adaptation disorder and talking about your presentation and all of the pearls of wisdom that you share when you're on the show. I get a lot of positive feedback because you're always organized in our brain injury kind of way, but you really are organized because you've practiced. And it is late at night and you know, anybody on the East Coast can get tired, but that really doesn't show with you. As I sit here and look at the program notes where I transpose the letters and welcomed, this last month I've been doing a lot of that. And one of the things
yeah.
that I learned now is not not learned or even relearned, but there was so much to do. I didn't have the option of slowing down, you know, things like Social Security and getting someone buried and getting a head start. Those kind of things are all now propositions where it's just one of those things in life where there's going to be sensory overload and you grab every tool that you have as an emotional and physical life raft, hold on tight and do what needs to be done, you know, and take the naps in between. You know, I was taking the naps in between. I'd stop at a certain point of the day and I really wasn't booking anything else that I had to think about. That's one of the reasons why the book was just shoved away off the table for a little while, the shows and the support meeting were. I needed quiet, and now I've put back in the shows and put back in the support meeting. The book is going to have to wait. But anyway, thank you so much for bringing us the show tonight. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
You know, my schedule, we talked about why, but we don't need to get into that right now. But my schedule is more open, and I can do, you know, maybe do one of these a month. And did we ever go through the 10, I mean, whenever you have an opening, have we ever done the 10 commandments of recovery? Have we ever done that?
No, we
okay.
haven't.
But I
will check in my calendar tomorrow.
Okay.
It seems
so
like, I will let you know. It seems like I might have March full. You know, one of the things I was doing before, and this is an opportune time, is, you know, I was usually booked out 3 or 4 months in advance. Well, as we came up to the holidays, I wasn't booking. And I was rescheduling some of those guests, so for the time I took off. And so I might be booked in March. I have to look at that. But then it will wind up so that I can just plan on you whatever month it is it breaks. And I think it might be after March, but I'll double check. Then we can just plan on one of the days in the month. And it's one of the things for you to think about, and I'll let everyone else know, I'm on every Wednesday night. I do have a co-host on the second Tuesday of every month, and I have one on the last Wednesday of every month, whether that's a fourth or a fifth. We just made it easy and said the last one of every month. So if it was ever like a first Wednesday of the month, this is just for your scheduling purposes, it would generally be a first or third Wednesday of the month that I would have you, that I would have that opening.
Okay.
And that'd be super cool. I would love that.
Actually, I'm looking, I have two little, like, card decks. One is compensation strategies. It's like 31 compensation strategies. And then I have these 10 commandments of recovery. We could just go through, you know, one or both of these next time. So, all right.
I'd love to do that. That second one sounds really, the first one does too, but the second one, I like that, the 10 commandments. So.
Yeah, well,
cool.
we can do the compensation. The 10 commandments won't take that long to go through because some of it we went over tonight, okay? You know, it's kind of saying it in a different way. And then the compensation strategies that we can go through. And all right, sounds good. Anyway, do you need to go to bed?
Okay,
Oh,
and we've only got 10 minutes left, so I'm going to be closing out anyway. You can go ahead and hang up. I'm going to just say goodnight and play one of our indie songs out. So thank you so much for being here tonight, and I'll shoot you some dates when I have a paper calendar and it's in my office, so I don't have it. But in the morning when I look at it, I'll shoot you some dates of when I start having openings. And then from that point forward, I'll have the openings.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much,
right.
Dr. Maria Romanus has been our guest tonight. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Good
you know,
night.
We could also do a Q&A sometime. Anyway, next time.
Do what?
We could do a Q&A sometime.
We could do...
You know,
oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe not on the air, have people, like, send questions, you know? Because if you have people coming on air, it might not go so smoothly because everybody gets stuck in telling their own stories. I mean, that's just, you know, just goes with,
yep.
with being a brain injury survivor. But if we, you know,
yep.
if we could, you know, have specific questions, we could answer them, I guess. So something we could think about sometime in the future. Okay. All right. Bye, Kim.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Good night,
okay,
Maria.
Bye.
Take care. Okay, everybody, that was Dr. Maria Romanus, and she's been a continuing guest over the years, and it looks like she'll be a regular in the future. And everybody is really like Dr. Maria. She's always got some very helpful information for people working recovery. So glad she was here tonight. A couple of months ago, I had a guest on my show who had been a contestant on America's Got Talent, Ben Waits. And I had posted a video of Ben. Ben has a disability ability. So many talents. I won't go into it, but obviously he made it to America's Got Talent. And I'm happy that he allowed me some of his music to play. I'm going to play a song called Can't Even Walk. I Can't Even Walk by Ben Waits. And it's Waites. So you can look up Ben Waits. I believe his website is benwaits.com. I'll double check that. But you can also find him on YouTube or Google Ben Waits, and he has a Facebook page, and you'll be able to find him there. So I'll be back in 4 minutes and 13 seconds. Check him out.
All right, I'm going to have a little church, okay? Put your seatbelt on. This world. mountains too high.
That was Ben Waitz, everyone. Great artist. He's a vocal instructor. He's a musician. He's a songwriter. He's a preacher. He's a teacher. And lots of other things. I encourage you to check him out and check him out on YouTube. So I want to thank you all for listening tonight. Again, I'm Kim Justice. I'm here every Wednesday night, and excuse me, got a frog in my throat. Gets light for all of us. Our founder started the network 15 years ago probably, and he happens to be in Pacific time, so the show is from 7 to 9. For me, it's 9 to 11, and God bless those East Coast guests like Dr. Maria, who work 10 to 12 to be on the show. So if you're listening on demand, just know if you hear a yawn or one of us screw up that we're doing the show pretty late. And if you're up late with us, you probably get it too. But in any case, I'm going to play one more song, Lily Kershaw with As It Seems. So good night and God bless everyone. I will be back next week with Simon Lewis for our Simon Says segment, which because of his health issues and my health and family issues, I think it's been 4 or 5 months since my last Wednesday of each month co-host Simon has been with me. So I'll be really glad to have him back next week, and we'll see you then. Good night and have a great week.
Well, I knew what I didn't want to know, and I saw where I go. So I took the path less traveled on, and I let my story be whispered when I'm gone. When I'm gone, when I'm find something to live for, 'cause when the darkness comes a-calling, you go back to where you were before. 'Cause this life is as fragile as a dream, and nothing's ever really as it seems. As it seems. As it the way Nothing's ever really as it is.